True leaders don't create followers, they create more leaders. Welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching and Education podcast series. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and this is part two of my virtual visit to Rivergum Primary School in Melbourne, Australia. In the previous episode, we heard from Roma McKinnon how, as principal at Rivergum Primary School, she used a coaching approach to reculture a school in crisis. Now working for the Department of Education, Roma, as the opening quote states, didn't just create followers in her time at Rivergum Primary School, she created more leaders. And I'm excited to be joined by these very leaders on the podcast today. Robin Tresiak, Amy Parsons and Jordan Warren are a group of young educational leaders who have a proven track record of empowering teachers to improve student outcomes. Through a collective coaching approach, they have been able to build upon the well-established coaching culture at Rivergum Primary School and have pushed the school's learning growth to some of the highest levels in the state of Victoria. Robin is currently the acting principal at Rivergum Primary School, Amy is the head of English and the professional learning communities, and Jordan, up until very recently, led mathematics, intervention and enrichment and has since taken on the role of assistant principal at Officer Secondary College. Robin, Amy and Jordan, it's a pleasure to have all three of you join me on the podcast today. Jordan, if I can start with you, can you take us back to the period just before Roma started her work with the department? The leadership team at Rivergum Primary School was in a very good place, and a real highlight was winning the 2020 Victorian Education Excellence Award for outstanding provision for high ability students. Can you share with us what was involved in that project and how coaching had a part to play in this incredible achievement?
Absolutely, Richard. So I think, as you had stated there, we had gone to a really good place at Rivergum. We were really confident to be able to try new things. I guess you could say we had some runs on the board, which gave us that ability to say, well, let's try something new. Let's try and be innovative. Let's try and do something. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. But we know we have the community around us and the coaches to help us get through any of the pitfalls that may come up. At this point, coaching was a big part of what we did with our staff. And we thought, well, perhaps this is something we could look at doing as well with our students. So I guess that starts, this would be the beginning of 2020. The Department of Education Victoria created a Victorian Excellence unit and provided some funding to all of the schools. So I believe we got about $12,000 or something to put towards this excellence program. But due to COVID and other extenuating circumstances, it was sort of, here's the money, but not really a what to do with it. So we thought, well, let's do something pretty awesome with it. Let's look at how we work with our coaching. Let's think about what we're doing with our students and create a program that's going to be innovative, that's going to help our students get to the outcomes that we want. At this point, we were really willing to take those risks. We had taken some risks in the past and they worked out. We were starting to see the student outcomes really change at our school. And we thought this was a great opportunity to take another one of those risks. And being led by Roma and that coaching approach we had, we knew that if we take a risk and we get into a sticky situation, that there's going to be someone there to help us to get out of that. So what we did is we took that money and we gave it to the students. We said, if you had $7,000 to improve Rivergum, what would you do with it?
Yes.
at the time, they're like, oh, like this is made up. This is like a hypothetical. And we had to say, no, this is 100% true. There's $7,000 that you can spend at the school. It was a flipped learning project. So all the explicit instruction happened via pre-recorded videos. And then we took that time when we were actually together as a group to go through a coaching approach. The majority of these students were used to being led explicitly by their teachers, sort of that gradual release of responsibility model. This had changed and put all of that autonomy on the students. They were responsible for getting things done in time. They were responsible for staying on track, for getting out of any holes or pitfalls they may fall into. So we used that coaching approach while we were together. It was like a modified growth model that we used with questions that were really basic to guide those students to get to that next level. And when we put the project together, I was expecting Xboxes in every classroom, PlayStations over here, going to the amusement park every other day. But some of the things the kids came up with were absolutely incredible. There was one student. She was a year six student and had moved to Australia as an immigrant. And she said, when I was in foundation year one and year two, I knew that I was supposed to read with my mom every day and that reading would help me become better at reading English and speaking English. But because her mother didn't speak English, that she couldn't do that. So she said, I propose that we spend the money on iPads so that older students can call foundation year one students and read to each other at nighttime to have that benefit of reading. We had ideas about sensory rooms and sensory gardens for students with ASD. But the most interesting one, the one that did end up winning, was there was a group of girls in year five that wanted new toilets. So I went through a growth model with them, and I said, well, what's the goal? The goal is that we want new toilets. What's the current reality? Well, the reality is it's going to cost over $80,000 to do what you want to do. And we don't have $80,000. We have $7,000. It was then that we got into those options that the girls decided, well, what if we made a cafe? A pop-up cafe that we take those profits from the cafe and we put those profits towards eventually getting new toilets. So at the end of the year, there was a vote. The students voted for the one-way fund cafe, which the next year in 2021 we ran. So those girls ran the cafe. We had a pop-up ice cream. I think we did a couple other different foods at certain times. And all those profits will eventually, we haven't made $80,000 yet, but we'll eventually get towards those toilets that those girls wanted. So I think that's really, that project came from that idea of let's take risks and let's use a coaching approach while taking those risks to ensure that we get the success that we want. Since then, I have moved on to a new school, a secondary college. And this is one of the main things I was able to bring with me is that I saw the impact that having that coaching kids could have and using that growth model with students. We currently have 39 students in year eight who are being coached by our leadership team here. They meet up once every 3 weeks, go through the growth model. The reason those year eights were chosen is because historically in Victoria, there's a large dip from year seven to year nine in our standardized assessment, specifically for those top highest achieving students. And so we're using this as like a mentor slash coaching program to ensure that anything that might get in the way between that year seven and year nine time doesn't get in the way.
Fantastic. It's a real story of success. And the word, you know, that really stands out for me, Jordan, when you're talking there is that word risk. And you guys have shown fantastic example of risk taking. And you're demonstrating that in front of the students. So you're encouraging risk taking from the students as well. And to be able to actually use the growth framework to try and address that problem of raising the money for the girls' toilets, I think is absolutely brilliant. So a fantastic example. Amy, if I can come to you next. During our planning discussion, you mentioned that even though professional development had taken a huge leap over the years since Roma had started back in 2009, you made the comment that there was a further significant improvement just prior to 2020 when some of your team trained in the use of the impact cycle. Can you share with us what the improvement looked like and why you think the impact cycle helped move things to another level?
Absolutely. So I began my role as a PL, a professional learning community leader, in late 2019. When I began, we went to the impact cycle. And I guess my role as a PLC leader was that I kind of took over in a position where it was really strong. There was a lot of really good things happening. Our teachers were really good at looking at student data, finding, you know, areas for improvement for students, really good data literacy. When we had our review in 2019, we had documentation, we have instructional models, we have those professional learning conversations, but there was sort of something missing because what was found in the review was that we have all this amazing stuff going on, but can you see it happening in the classrooms? Where's the connection between the professional learning and the instructional model and the documentation that's in place? So that was kind of the next step for me. So when we went to the impact cycle, it was really, really exciting because it's just kind of, there was a lot of things in there that really made a lot of sense and kind of filled those gaps. So an example of that is the peers goal. So we really took from that impact cycle the peers goals and kind of identifying the current reality. So to give you an example of what was happening in like the professional learning community at River Gum. So we have teachers set up in teams of year level.
Yep.
So there'll be three or four teachers who, for example, teach year six, and they will meet every week. So there's time to meet every week. So it doesn't take out of kind of after school time. So that's also something that's really put into place by leadership like Roma, making sure that there's resources and time available for teachers to have these reflective conversations.
Yeah.
So teachers were looking at student data, and then they'd sort of go away and, you know, do their thing in their classrooms and make an impact on that student data, and then come back the next week and maybe look at another data set, like in maths or, you know, whatever it is. But sort of what was missing was that focus on, like, the how, like, what's changing, what teacher change is happening to improve those student outcomes.
Yes.
So here in Victoria, we have a structure called the improvement cycle. So that goes through evaluate and diagnose, prioritize and set goals, develop and plan, and implement and monitor. And that aligns really well with the impact cycle. So you've got identify, learn, and improve. So what we were really good at, what I was just describing, is that we're really good at looking at the data at the start. So evaluate and diagnose. But we're maybe not allowing the time to really delve into prioritizing and setting the goal, developing and planning, and implementing and monitoring. Hmm. So that's where it really struck us with the current reality, and allowing time for teachers to really explore that current reality. So what I did from there was I knew that I had, because of the way that the school's already structured by the time I got into this position, we had PLT leaders who are, you know, they're already receiving coaching and they're in those positions where they can go to their team and help us with that risk-taking kind of culture that we've got. So when we see something that we think will work, all I really had to do was meet with my PLT leaders, be consistent with the documentation I had, so making sure that it was really clear where the evidence was coming from, it was evidence-based with the impact cycle, creating a template for goal setting around the peers' goals, and so making sure that, you know, those leaders are also really clear. There's a lot of clarity on what's expected of them so that they can then go to their teams and we can, you know, there's a lot of professional trust there where they can go to their teams and implement this and have a go and see if it works without that pressure of what if it doesn't work. You know, but there's that culture that we've built of, you know, it's okay to have a go, and if it doesn't work, it's a learning experience and we can build from there.
Again, just comes through quite clearly the concept of risk. You know, people are allowed to make mistakes. You know, people are allowed to try something out, and, you know, if it doesn't work, you know, we'll try it slightly differently the next time. So that comes through really, really clearly. Robin, if I can put this next question to you. At the time of the handover, when Roma moved to work with the department, you were handed the reins and took on the principal position. In the previous episode that I recorded with Roma, the listeners heard how she had been instrumental in turning the school around and building up the leadership team. Can you share with us how that handover played out?
Yeah, sure, no worries. I think it obviously didn't happen by chance. Roma had spent many years at River Gum really building that school culture. Roma's belief in coaching as a way of being was really prevalent with myself and Amy and Jordan and all her leaders as we had come up through her leadership team, and kind of provided that really sustainable approach that enabled her to really nurture and grow us as leaders. So it was a really strong foundation and base that we were coming from with Roma. And she spent years cultivating this change. So through that development of the shared leadership, making sure we had an orderly learning environment, and just, I guess, her belief, she had really immense value in her middle leaders, and just that idea around middle leaders as being the heart of your school. They're the feet on the ground, and they're the ones that are able to carry through the actions of the, you know, the big ideas that we come up with, I guess. As a previous leader myself, so as we've spoken a lot about risk, I was afforded lots of those opportunities to take risk as well, fail and learn from those mistakes, but always with the security that it was okay and this is how we grow and improve, that, you know, that vulnerability as a leader really enables you to, in sharing that with others, also grow others. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things that helped that handover is, the risk-taking and just having a go at things. So, and I guess in the background, while experiencing our own professional learning in teaching and learning and that management and strategic planning of a school, which is really important too. And I think just that focus on that building of that strong leadership through that coaching culture really set the scene for the seamless transition.
Yeah.
As Roma stepped away, that helped us to not just keep the work going, but to continue to evolve and develop it to where it is now, which is really exciting because that's been through a pandemic. So, and we've also been given the tools and the skills, I guess, that access to success idea, which again comes back to the risk taking. I just also add that one of the main things Roma helped us do as leaders in that transition is to prioritise our work too. So as a bunch of really passionate educators with many, many ideas and high achievers with lots of ideas going around, being able to narrow those and bring them in to be able to implement with impact, which I think is something we've got much better at.
Mm-hmm.
And then that coaching culture kind of rubbing off on us as well. So we all see ourselves as coaches now as well, which is that really significant lever for improvement.
Fantastic. Robin, if I can stay with you for the next question. In recent years, the staff at Rivergum Primary School have had a very positive experience of professional learning. Moving forward as a leadership team, you took on quite, as we've said, a risk-taking approach to professional learning. Can you share with us what you did differently and why it had such a positive effect?
And I think that flows on from Amy's response around the PLCs and the introduction of the impact cycle. And professional learning is definitely something I've always been hugely passionate about.
Yes.
We speak so much about how for students we prioritise learning that's differentiated, it's got goals, that tasks are relevant and engaging, all of that. But quite often we don't then implement the same for our staff.
Yeah.
So that began really in 2020. So as the pandemic sort of forced us to think a bit differently about how we could still offer professional learning to our staff. And we were just really keen to make that change. Sort of the feedback was coming in, you know, the staff survey was indicating that this was an area we could focus on.
Yes.
And just that, I guess, that belief that staff really deserved more. In terms of their professional learning, and we know that we can have an impact. And we also know that we know the research says that teachers don't change their practice or apply new learning by listening to me or Amy or Jordan waffle on in front of them for an hour to tell them how to go and do something in their classrooms.
Yes.
Yeah, and Amy's introduced to us this year that idea of the Guski model of teacher change.
Mm-hmm.
So that idea that by changing teacher practice, it comes when you change teacher beliefs and their attitudes, which is a result of the improvement in student outcomes that come from the change in teacher practice. So I think if you sit that at the base of what we're working on, and then the evolution of that use of the impact cycle as well and the work of the PLCs really then was the catalyst to totally flip our model from that one size fits all to be focused more on what are those effective teaching practices and strategies and shift towards, as Amy said before, actually, the how we teach over what we teach.
Brilliant.
So the PL aligning with what was happening in the PLCs, and I think that link is a real key to that, so that the PLCs inform the professional learning, which then feeds right back into the PLC improvement cycle. So you've got this really beautiful loop which is continually cycling.
Yep.
And by focusing in on teaching strategies, it automatically sort of gets rid of that issue where you've got a music teacher or a science teacher that says, hey, this PL is not relevant for me. Why am I sitting in this?
Yes.
Because, in fact, we're actually focusing on strategies which are effective teaching practices. Good teaching is good teaching.
Yes.
So I guess the main things then around the PL is that shift to the focus on the actions and the work discussed in those PLCs and the peers' goals. And I guess coming full circle back to that seamless transition, there's an incredible amount of high levels of trust for teachers and the autonomy for them to make those decisions about what is important to them and their learning. And trust that I guess it's kind of a bit of a leap sometimes, but if you've got the conditions in place, it works. But trusting your staff that they value their professional growth because they want to improve their own practice for their students. They want to keep learning. And there's a whole range of approaches that are sort of then tie this nice little package up with a bow. So a big focus around professional reading, focused on our whole school goals. That sort of gives the research base. So we're not just picking from Pinterest or Teachers Pay Teachers, like it's research-based practices. TeachersNet can meet in your traditional cross team, but then focusing on the strategy. So they're, again, discussing the how, not so much of the what. And then I think my favourite part that we've introduced is the teacher spotlights, which is like a supersized way of doing peer observations in a really easy way. So teachers, you know, and it's not glossy and shiny and pretty. They might just set their phone up in their classroom, take a 10-minute snapshot of their hinge question strategy that they've been focusing on in their peers goal. And then that's able to be shared instantly with all staff rather than having to get staff come in and do the observation in person. It's really exciting stuff. And I think just that also as a leadership team, we're really active in that process. So it's really transparent. You know, we participate in these tasks too, where learners alongside our staff, a bit more of that flat leadership model. And there is degrees of accountability with it as well. We have shared Google Drive, so a lot of the reflections for the learning are shared and really visible. But, yeah, it's really exciting stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Robin. Amy, if I could turn to you for the next question. It's clear to us as listeners that there have been many, many positives since you guys have taken over from Roma, and you're to be given credit for that. However, I'm sure there were times when things didn't just go to plan, or maybe there were hiccups and setbacks. Can you share maybe some of those with us and tell us how you addressed them?
Yeah, sure. So given the timeline of this, I think the first one is pretty obvious. This work was sort of being implemented between 2020 and now. So we've had the pandemic. I'm not sure how familiar you are with what we went through here in Victoria, but we had over those 2 years, we had three extended lockdowns for 3 months or more. We had three or four snap lockdowns, which were, you know, anything from a week to maybe 3 or 4 weeks to 2 months. So just being able to, in that time, we were expected, of course, as well, to shift from face-to-face learning to remote learning. So it wasn't ever, you know, let's have holidays, let's have a break. So I guess trying to implement some of these changes in that time, it's obviously really important that, you know, we really harness that same focus of we're learning together. Leadership is learning alongside our teachers, especially in this, it's completely unknown. But then falling back on what we know has worked. So making sure that we had clarity during remote learning with an instructional model, so modifying our instructional model to make sure it was consistent in remote learning as well as at school. So, you know, making sure that we continued with those changes that we implemented from the impact cycle, and maintaining our professional learning community as well and staying connected with everyone, making sure we still had our meeting schedules. So that professional learning really still happened as well as, you know, the teaching. So that was a main challenge. That was one of the biggest challenges. But I think that, you know, due to the way that our culture had already been kind of developed, it wasn't too much of a hurdle for us to put those things in place and just continue the work and continue that reflection. So I guess the other thing that was a big challenge as well within all of that, whether we're remote or on site, was probably part of identifying the current reality and introducing video reflection. So obviously that's a big thing for teachers to, you know, get past that initial, what do I look like? What do I sound like? All of that stuff, to actually focus on what's actually happening in the video. But again, we saw the pandemic as a positive in this sense, because teachers were becoming really comfortable with seeing themselves on film because they were filming lessons for students, putting them together within their teams and, you know, providing that asynchronous learning to their students as well as live synchronous lessons. So we kind of really embraced that and used that as an opportunity for the basis of sort of looking at that current reality and looking at micro data of their teaching to really focus on the what is happening in their lessons. So when they're going through their impact cycle, they're able to really drill down on the what based on our instructional model, based on what they're seeing from themselves with their teaching as well. So it really helped when we came back on site to be able to harness that and make sure that we could use that like in person as well when we were doing self-reflections to set these peers goals. I guess the other way we really dealt with that challenge as well is that it's really important as leadership that we were showing our own vulnerability as well. So making sure that if we were expecting them to do anything, then we were doing it ourselves as well. So we would reflect on our own videos, whether it be in the classroom, whether it be a coaching session. We also got our professional learning team leaders to be the first to, you know, show their video in a meeting with their peers to make sure that, you know, they were putting themselves out there first to make teachers feel comfortable and make them realize that it's not about accountability and ticking boxes, what are you doing, what are you not doing, but it's actually about self-reflection and finding what you're passionate about and what you want to kind of improve within your teaching. And that was a really important component to make sure that we were doing anything that we expect our teachers to do.
Brilliant.
I think was probably the key.
Yeah, leading by example, which is terrific. Jordan, any challenges that you want to pick up on how you address those?
Sure, Richard. I'll just add one quick thing. I think, and this may have even just been my situation. When I was coaching the middle school teachers. So we had about 12 teachers in the middle school when we first started this. And I think the main takeaway is that it's not a race. Implementing and embedding a coaching culture and it takes time. It takes literally years. And I think after my first coaching cycle, I was like, this was so good, so amazing. Everyone needs to do it right now, yesterday. And so then just the logistics of that, saying, okay, we need to coach today, tomorrow, and you have 12 people you're trying to coach at one time. It's not actually realistic. And we learned that when I was, okay, we have to cancel this meeting. We're not able to get to that meeting. So, okay, let's focus on a smaller number of staff. Do it really well.
Yeah.
And then we'll add from there. So just recognizing it's not a race. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen overnight. You're not going to go to the impact cycle, or you're not going to go to your growth coaching accreditation and come back and everyone will have a coach the next day at your school. Just realizing that it does take time and having, I'm kind of jumping ahead here a bit, but having those people that are doing the coaching with you celebrate that success for you. They're the ones who are going to spread it, and they're the ones who are going to get you more clients or more coaches moving forward.
Fantastic. Jordan, if I can stay with you for this next question, for those listeners who are at the start of their coaching journey and are full of enthusiasm, what pieces of advice would you share with them to ensure they make good, effective progress developing a coaching culture in their school?
Yeah, great question. This one really hits home to me because I've recently left Rivergum, which was very difficult to do.
Yes.
Rivergum was such an amazing school. The kids are awesome. The teachers are awesome. Everything was awesome. And I've come to Officer, which is also a fantastic school with great staff members, but they're earlier on in their coaching stage. So I had to sort of start from the fresh and think, what did we do at Rivergum? So I can replicate that here at Officer. And so in this thought process, I've come up with four key points. The first is getting that win early and being really strategic about who you're going to coach first. Sure. So say you're coming right off listening to this podcast, or you just did your coaching training and you go, who's my first person? Yeah. Make sure you're not choosing the staff member who is historical for not listening during PD, or you don't choose, yes, don't choose someone because you think, oh, they could really benefit from improving practice. Choose someone who,
yes,
is going to be engaged, is more often than not positive, want to do it, and someone who has that pull within the school as well. Someone who, you know, if people hear that this person had a successful coaching, they're going to go, oh, I want that too. I want to do that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if someone, the first person, has a negative sort of connotation about it, that's going to spread real quick. So make sure you're strategic about that first person you coach and get that win early, and celebrate that and have them celebrate that amongst the school. My second is to focus on the 1%. This kind of builds on what I just talked about, and that we refer to it as the aggregation of marginal gains, that idea that tiny 1% improvements will add together to create a big, big change. And focus on that with your staff and get that staff buy-in. So when I got here, we actually talked about this 200 school days in a year. Is it realistic for you to get better every single day? And it wasn't. But staff said, you know, I can probably get better every other day. So that's 100 days. So he said, if you can get better every other day, that's 1% over 100 days. You're a 10% better teacher by the end of the year. And we're going to use this coaching approach every time we're coaching to focus on what's that thing that's 1% better. We went even further. We went the 60 minutes in the session times 60 seconds is 3,600 seconds. That's 36 seconds of your lesson that you need to be 1% better. So when we're talking about those micro goals, what we did in the PLC at River Gum, the hinge questions, that one question will take you 36 seconds. So if you ask one better question today than you did yesterday, you're 1% better. And that's what we focus on in the coaching, because so often they might come in with this big macro problem that I need to change and save the world. Well, we're not going to save the world in one session, but if you get 1% better from this coaching session and you do that every time we have a coaching session, you will be way better. Within 10 years, you're 100% better if you got better every other day over a 10-year period as a teacher. The next was to celebrate those wins. So celebrate every 1%. Don't wait for the PAT, or I guess you don't have PAT everywhere, but don't wait for those large-scale summative assessments. Don't wait for your NAP plans or your Ofsted scores. Celebrate every 1% score that you get. If you have a exit ticket that's really strong from a coaching session, as a leader, share that in a briefing. Share that at a professional learning session. If it's micro data, so someone went from, there was only 8 opportunities for students to respond before the coaching, you do a coaching, they film themselves, and there's 42 opportunities for kids to respond. Celebrate that. Celebrate every tiny win you get, because it's going to keep adding up and adding up to build that culture at your college or your school. And the last is something that I think happens pretty often across schools, is that coaching is used as a way of almost performance management, this is our group of underachieving students, or sorry, staff. They need to be coached, and that's never going to work because no one's ever going to want to do coaching. So it's coming from it from that strength-based approach. Our best teachers get coached. Our leaders get coached. Everyone has a coach because everyone can improve. And working on it as a, we're not here to improve something that you're bad at. We're here to improve. If you're already strong at something, we're going to do that more. And that 1% builds back to that. Take the best thing you did in your lesson and do that best thing for 36 more seconds, and you're 1% better. And that strength approach and that collective belief that everyone can improve and everyone can get better will be a huge impact on building that coaching culture at your school.
Fantastic advice, Jordan. Really appreciate that. Robin, Amy, and Jordan, it really has been a pleasure to have you on the podcast today to hear your collective stories of carrying on the coaching baton at River Gum Primary School. Robin and Amy, I'd like to wish you continued success as you further develop the coaching culture at River Gum. And Jordan, congratulations on your move to Officer Secondary College as assistant principal. Maybe there's another podcast opportunity for us as you transfer your coaching skills and experience to a whole new environment. For our listeners, I'm sure you've been encouraged over these last 2 episodes to see the impact a coaching approach can have on developing a leadership team, and how a strong coaching culture can not only survive but actually thrive through a period of leadership change. This truly has been an excellent example of what happens when theory and good intentions meet reality.